Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, we're talking all about eco-friendly and ethical footwear, and I'm really, really excited to welcome my guest, Kyle Parsons, founder of Indosol, on the podcast. I've talked about them tons of times on the blog before, and this sustainability story is one for the ages, and seriously, one that I am so excited for y'all to get to hear about. So, Kyle, thank you so much for doing this with us.
Hi, Amy. Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Okay, so let's kick off kind of easy. Indosol's been, you know, changing the shoe game since 2009, but, you know, I know it was a trip to Bali a few years earlier that actually inspired the entirety of the brand. So what happened in Bali and how did that transform into the brand Indosol that we know now? Talk us through that whole journey.
Yeah, sure. My dad actually had been traveling to Bali since the early 1980s. And I just grew up, you know, hearing stories of Bali and getting some cool artifacts and things that he would carry back with him. So I always knew about Bali and always wanted to visit. And I finally got my shot in the early 2000s on a family trip. And, you know, similar to everyone's experience when they visit Bali, I was blown away. It was just so beautiful. The beaches are incredible. The people, the food, the colors and the art just really caught my eye. And then just, you know, coincidentally, as I was walking down the street one day, the sandals that I were wearing, they broke. The thong pulled out of them, and I was standing barefoot on the sidewalk, and I needed a solution. I needed a new pair of sandals. I needed it quick. The streets are not so clean there. So I went shopping. I went and ducked into a few boutiques looking for a unique pair of sandals, maybe something with a natural weave on it or something that just really represented Bali. But when I found them, they had that natural weave on top, but on the sole, there was a tire. It was a thick tire that came from a motorbike. And I had never seen that before. Thought it was kind of cool. Thought it was just a nice, resourceful idea, you know, of the Balinese people. And I got the sandals and started wearing them. They were super uncomfortable, but there was a vision, you know, there was a vision surrounded by that. And also, after doing some research, I found that tire pollution was one of the biggest problems that no one realized was a problem. You know, there wasn't a lot of education on tire pollution. So just the timing seemed right, given that they make a durable pair of sandals, you know, on the sole. And, you know, there was a need to give more awareness to waste tires and what they do to the environment.
So the issue of global tire waste obviously is a huge problem. Why do you think that people aren't more aware of it, and how bad is it really?
Yeah, you know, everyone knows about plastics at this point, and we've done what we can for plastics as far as recycling. And tires are one of those things that are just, you know, they're kind of a necessary evil. I mean, we need vehicles, we need to get around. But all the, you know, the chemical makeup of a tire contains a lot of oil and a lot of latex, and they're basically indestructible. You know, they're hard to break down, and they're so strong that they don't break down as easily as other materials. So what happens is they've for years and years or really since the first tire was ever made, it's out there somewhere, because we don't actually know how long it takes to decompose. It could be, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. So a lot of them have ended up in the oceans, you know, all on the land. And each year there's billions of tires that end up either in the landfill or on the, you know, on the land.
So when you were walking down the street in Bali and the thong popped off your sandal and you started dreaming up this idea, is that where you think that you kind of sparked your passion for environmental sustainability, or were you raised that way? Where did your eco-friendly attitude come from?
Yeah, for me, Indosol was kind of a hybrid of multiple life experiences, which I didn't even realize till I was doing Indosol. I didn't even really know why I got into it until I looked into my past. I went to a prep school in New Hampshire called Proctor Academy. We were one of the first schools to do composting and solar energy. And that was really neat. And then when I was 20, I worked a summer in Nantucket, and I worked at a recycling facility, basically a dump. And I worked the night shift organizing recyclables. So kind of separating plastics, you know, those to be recycled and those that would be baled up and shipped off the island. And prior to that, I didn't know about recycling. I didn't know what recycling was. And then coincidentally, the following summer, I worked at a surf shop and they put me in charge of the sandal section. And I was just selling flip-flops all day long and putting customers in it, sizing them up and sending them to the register, and sold a ton of sandals that summer. And I was just, you know, kind of got into brands. Like I really liked Reef and Rainbow, and I was just into the brands and into the product. So by the time I got to Bali several years later, just all of the dots kind of connected.
So can you tell us more about that actual process? Like what steps does it take to get from, you know, an old car tire in a landfill to a functional and fashionable shoe?
Right. Well, this, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's, you know, we're all faced with major challenges. And for me, this was the part where I didn't even realize that I didn't know what I didn't know. And I'd never really made product before, never made sandals. So I didn't really have a clue where to start. So, you know, for me in Bali and just, you know, being an American in a foreign land, I had to ask a lot of people, you know, just kind of ask around and try to find the footwear manufacturer, so to speak. And in Bali itself isn't known for manufacturing footwear. So it took a while. You know, we finally found an outfit that could produce what we were looking for. So we basically started by just collecting tires, even getting them off the side of the road and trying to find the most worn down tires and the ones that would work the best for becoming a sole of our sandals. And at the beginning, everything was hand done. Everything was hand cut and then adhered to a sandal upper. And there was just a lot of testing, you know, a lot of trial runs and a lot of uncomfortability and blisters at the beginning, until we could get the product refined. And that's an ongoing process even to this day, really.
So the idea, I mean, you know, the idea itself is huge and one that takes, like you said, a lot of trial and error, a lot of blisters, a lot of research. And I read somewhere that it was in that kind of bigger R&D period that you created your own like material, the Envro fiber. What makes the material so unique?
Yeah, well, you know, the first step was really the tires, and that was our bread and butter, and that was our core story. And our dream from the beginning was to take an age-old concept, which was using the tires and turning them into sandals or shoe soles, which had been around, and make it fashionable and cool, which really, to our knowledge, hadn't been done. So that was really the first step. And then building the sandal from the ground up, from taking the idea we had from a tire sole, and then doing the best we could on the upper materials as well. So at the beginning, we started out with natural fibers and leaf type contents, and those broke down quickly, although they look super cool. And as time has gone on, we've refined the materials and refined all the processes too. So for years we had a handmade product and raw upcycled motorbike tires, but the issue was that we couldn't scale it. As soon as we started to pick up steam as a company, we couldn't deliver. We couldn't really reach the volume that we wanted to make a viable business out of it, and also to really make a dramatic impact of the environment's bottom line. So we knew we had to shift. So we slowed things down. This was 2016, 17, where we basically just stopped. We needed to redevelop everything if we were going to actually make it as a business. So we put our heads together with our team, and we found an engineer, and we found a new manufacturing facility that could help us redevelop this process. So we basically started to grind the tires down and pulverize them. And then we've created a new formula to have a consistent product that could be mass produced, but also while making even a larger environmental impact and saving more tires by being able to scale up our volume.
And are you guys still manufacturing and producing in Bali?
No, we produce in Java, Indonesia now.
So what are some of the challenges with working overseas, especially, you know, over the last 16 months with the pandemic?
Yeah, well, our core team still lives in Bali, and we have a flagship store there, and we have an office, and we have a great team that helps manage the business. The challenges, you know, once COVID hit, you know, were numerous. So I think it started first and foremost with our distribution channels, where we saw our wholesale business and our retailers kind of shut us down almost overnight. And that was tough. You know, it was during what would have been our busy season. You know, March and April is when we start delivering. And then we have our retailers calling us and saying, don't ship, don't ship. So we felt a bit stuck there, you know. Of course, as everyone did, we started to just first, you know, lick our wounds and reevaluate what we were going to do and direct it as much as we could online through our website and through e-commerce. You know, at the factory level, you know, things were scaled back and slowed down with a skeleton crew, but we got through the year, we got through 2020, and what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So, you know, we have a fresh new outlook here in 21.
Absolutely. And I do want to touch on your team a little bit. You know, you guys have a great group behind you, and a lot of that is cemented in your B Corp certification. Indosol became B Corp certified in 2014. And, you know, being a B Corp means you're held to a really high standard for business and ESG practices. What does your B Corp certification mean to you?
Oh, yeah. You know, we talk about it all the time. We love B Corp, and it's done wonders for our business. And just it's a great representation of what we do and, you know, our business ethos, as well as the individuals who run it. So we like to talk about it as, you know, a stamp of approval, or, you know, a symbol that says that we're doing what we say we're doing. And the verification of that, you know, it starts at the factory level, and, you know, the people that are working there and the processes that we use, also the materials that we use, and then, you know, our employee and company structure as well.
It's a unique story. You know, you have this idea, you scale it, you pivot, you get slammed with a pandemic, you know. Where do you see Indosol in 5 years from now?
Yeah, well, things are moving quickly. And as far as eco fashion is concerned, and we're really happy to see a lot of other brands getting on board. And, you know, we like to think that we were in the game quite early and are doing our best to just keep on evolving, right? And just raising the bar. And with a niche of taking, you know, one person's trash and making it into someone else's treasure, we're just, you know, diving deeper into the landfill and trying to find more cool materials to make more things. So, you know, as things evolve, we're going to be releasing soles made with other materials, you know, other waste materials, you know, might even be other companies or other brands' waste and taking it and making it cool and changing it to different colors and working it into our footwear. So that's really the next step, is to take Indosol beyond just the use of what it has been in tires and implementing other materials as well, which will be really fun. You know, over the next 5 years, you know, our goal is just really to keep keep building the brand and really staying in our lane, you know, really in open-toed footwear. We have some great colors in our flip-flops, but we've also expanded to our slides. And those are doing really well.
I love them.
Oh, do you? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What color?
Oh my gosh. They're like the lightish yellow cream. They have a funky name.
Nice. The pollen?
Pollen. That's it.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I love
them. Great. Good. Loved hearing that.
And it's one of my, you know, I mean, perfect segue into kind of the next part of this. You know, I came into the world of environmental sustainability through Rubicon almost 4 years ago. And before that, you know, I really thought about sustainability and sustainable fashion as like burlap sacks and people who grew out their leg hair and chained themselves to trees. And that's how you were going to make a difference. And then I saw a TED Talk, and it actually was from you on conscious consumerism. And if you've listened to any of the episodes of the Town Hall, I'm always talking about conscious consumerism. I'm, you know, kind of taking a lot of that from you and talking about how we can use our dollar to be eco-friendly. We can kind of put our money where our mouth is and walk the walk. And before we hop into our rapid fire game, first of all, I'm fangirling a little bit because it really is one of the videos I watched that kind of changed my perspective on anything. But also, what advice would you give to a new listener on how they can start to become conscious consumers? How can somebody get started?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of different ways. You know, one way is to just really think about which aspect of conscious consumer really applies to you, because at this point, there's many. And the way we think about, you know, Indosol and how our customer may go onto our website, for example, and shop, is they might be checking off the boxes. So, you know, maybe you're into vegan goods, or maybe you like recycled goods, or maybe you like, you know, organic or B Corp approved, or whether it's fair trade, and kind of getting like understanding what your niche is, you know, and kind of going after that and, you know, shopping with that theme along all of your products, whether it be what you wear or what you eat, or, you know, even, you know, these days, the furniture that you buy. So it's really been impressive as to how much, you know, the conscious consumer game has elevated over the last several years, where now it's, you know, not just about what's in it, but also, you know, people feeling good about wearing it and how they associate the two together.
Absolutely. I love a good upcycled product. I always think those stories are very mm-hmm. cool. I think that's my niche. Okay. So I wanted to play a rapid fire game with you before we wrap up.
Okay.
Nothing scary. I'm going to ask you just 10 quick questions and you fire off the first thing that comes to your head. You ready?
Got it.
What does your morning routine look like?
Coffee. And if there's wave surfing.
Yeah. Who's the last person that you texted?
My girlfriend.
What is one piece of advice you'd give to an aspiring entrepreneur?
Do your homework. And when you're done doing your homework, just go for it.
What is your favorite thing to have for lunch?
Chicken salad.
What was the first concert you ever went to?
Billy Joel, River of Dreams tour with my dad at the Boston Garden.
What is one thing in the last year that the pandemic has taught you?
Oh, patience and perseverance.
What is one, you know, eco-friendly habit, one sustainable action that you do every day?
Refilling my own water bottle.
If you could cast anyone to play you in the movie of your life, who would you cast as yourself and why? Living or dead?
Oh, wow. Living or dead, wow. Maybe a young Al Pacino.
What are you reading right now?
Endurance.
And what does success mean to you?
Success means to me being able to live your lifestyle the way you want. And if you wake up each morning excited to do what you do, then you're not working.
Kyle, thank you so much for coming on today. This conversation was super inspiring. I'm very honored to be the one, you know, amongst others that get to tell that story for you. So thank you again for everything that you guys are doing to help close the loop.
Yeah, likewise, Amy. Really appreciate what you guys do as well. Thanks so much.